Welcome to the Fuller Tracy Money Audio Commentary. This is Owen Tracy recording. It is 12:31 p.m. Today is February 13th. Well, when we look at what the market is reacting to at present, I think there are two important points. One is that CPI is due tomorrow, and since a lot of people have been worried about whether inflation is in fact coming back, then people are going to be looking at that figure. The last figure for the CPI year over year was 2.1%. The survey is for 1.9% because people are assuming that because we had inclement weather in January, that people were probably deterred from going out and buying new cars or making new purchases. And I think that also the fact that oil prices are beginning to come down will have had at least a contributing factor in starting to get people to think about that perhaps there won't be quite as much inflationary pressure. Another point is that while certainly I think that consumer sentiment has probably picked up, the vast majority of people at least don't seem to be commenting on the fact that it is the tax cuts for corporations that are becoming effective immediately. For your normal person in the street, they won't see the full benefit of tax cuts until next year. So that is something that is probably going to figure into consumer sentiment over time. What is an additional point I think that is more important right now is the fact that the yen is strengthening up, that it was stronger quite a bit, almost a full yen in here today, but it is coming off its highs as we approach the close, and I think that is moving part and parcel with the fact that the stock market is a little bit firmer in here today. This is the lower side of the dollar's range against the yen, and when we look at it over the last year, it has bounced from this area on successive occasions. It will have to do it again on this occasion to confirm that the dollar is back in a demand-dominated environment. But more to the point is that Kuroda has been reappointed as the central banker for Japan, and he didn't quite achieve his 2% inflation rate on his first term, and I think people are starting to wonder whether he has infinite resources with which to try and stoke inflation, or whether they're just going to give up. This has been a terminal problem for Japan, is that they have adopted easing policies and given up too early, rather than and of course the other point was that they didn't force through the rationalization of the banking sector after their crash in 1989, and they're still suffering from some of the hangover from that. The big question then is, because Japan is one of the, I think, the only country really that is running both monetary and fiscal stimulus concurrently, whereas the EU is at a point where it is doing a little bit, but not a lot of stimulus because it's tapering, and then it went through the fiscal austerity measures, and those have been eased off, so it's not quite as fiscally austere as it was. So it's sort of like Japan light. But that is beginning to. But the fact is that the Europeans are looking towards tapering, and they are looking at exiting their program later this year. So that's a pretty swift taper. But then the question is, what next? Because I think there's the potential for, or a realistic possibility at least, that when we look at, for example, what's happening with the bond market, that there is the possibility that the Europeans will have their own version of a taper tantrum. German bund yields are up to 75 basis points. It's not that long ago they were closer to a quarter of 1%. So we've already seen yields starting to move higher. They have not yet moved higher for either Spain or Italy. But one thing that is noteworthy is that the Spanish stock market has pulled back in here. It is now below its trend mean. And when we look at it over the last decade, then it's been largely range bound, but it's approximately mid range right now. Whereas there are a significant number of other European indices that are towards the upper side of their respective ranges. And the Italian index, which had been such an impressive performer for much of 2017, has pulled back sharply over the last 3 weeks. And now it is right in the region of the trend mean. This is from the upper side of a decade long range. So if it is going to confirm that we're back in a demand dominated environment beyond the short term, it's going to have to find support and do so pretty quickly. Well, I think that's pretty much the case for a lot of markets. So, for example, the FTSE 100 is back testing the 7,000 level, and it is finding support in here this week. But it needs to do more than that, and most particularly needs to sustain and move back above the trend mean to confirm more than short-term demand dominance. Then, when we look at what's going on Wall Street, well, obviously, we have these questions about what's happening with inflation, but we've had a reasonable bounce over the last three sessions. And I think as long as that remains the case, then we can give the benefit of the doubt to some additional bounce in here. And that eventually, especially when you have these very swift declines, it's quite regular that you get a period of support building, which often has some higher volatility and even a retest of the low is not at all beyond the bounce possibility. So far, we're in the rebound stage, and there has been a lot of people talking about you should buy the dip. That 10% pullback has historically been an opportunity to buy the dip, and certainly that's what people are engaging in right now. A surprise on the upside for inflation would probably result in some profit taking from this bounce, but I'm rather skeptical that we're in fact going to get a surprise on the inflationary front. And most particularly because I think it's already been priced in. When we look at what's going on in the bond market, bond yields have raced to get up to this 2.8% level. Now, it isn't simply that you have an inflation scare, it's rather that the Fed is buying fewer of them and the Treasury is issuing more of them. So that is contributing to higher yields. It is very simply a matter of supply and demand, and that is certainly affecting the market at present. And it's likely to remain a headwind for bond prices over the short and indeed the medium term. But nonetheless, there's been a good share of news priced in already, and we do have a short-term oversold condition on those bond prices. So it isn't beyond the bounds possibility that we get some pause and consolidation here. And certainly, the downtrend is not as consistent as it was. That was a rather significant move on the upside just last week, in conjunction with the big pullback that we saw on the equity markets. And now I think that there is a reasonable argument that we should see a reversion back to the mean in terms of bond prices. And perhaps at that point, then we can start rolling out the more bearish arguments once more. So I think that short term, there is the potential for some steadying, and not least when you also look at the total return on bonds that were right in the region of the lows from late 2016, and there is a short-term oversold condition. So it wouldn't be that surprising that we see some rallying from here. Then when we look at the crude oil market, this is the largest pullback since at least June of last year, and it compromises the a rather consistent advance from that June low. So now the big question is just how well is support going to be found around $60? This is a rather key level, considering that it also now represents the region of the trend mean, and it's a psychological level because it represented an area of resistance on the way up. So there is the potential here that we get some additional steadying, but there has been a distinct lack of clear upward dynamics. And I think that and this is a chart that I've referenced in regard to oil on a number of occasions, but natural gas is back to $2.60. It came down with a bang in the last 3 weeks and now is back on the lows for the last 12 months. But when we look at this evolving range since 2009, the amplitude of the range is from $2 to $6, which is a fairly considerable move. And more importantly, that $6 level is only reached in extremis. More regularly, the range is from about $2 to $4, and we're currently around $2.60. And what that really helps to ram home the point that there is plenty of natural gas around, and that there is absolutely no shortage of it. It is only when you get very inclement weather that it sends a spike higher in natural gas prices. There is an additional export terminal being tested right now in at Sabine Pass in Louisiana, which will allow the USA to start exporting at in very large crude carriers. So those are the super large the tankers that transport upwards of 2 million barrels of oil in one go. And what that will do is open up an additional avenue for US crude oil exports. And when we think about the fact that West Texas Intermediate is trading around $59, so even despite the fact that the spread between WTI and Brent has come in, they're still getting better prices by exporting than selling domestically. So that is going to remove a lot of the arbitrage between the US and the global market if the US is able to export in volume. It will also reduce the cost of sending that crude oil internationally. And that also represents a headwind for oil prices over the medium term. And it does suggest that $70 is a meaningful level that will probably be a point where it's going to be difficult for prices to rally significantly above it in the over the course of the lengthy medium term. Whereas there will be occasions when oil prices probably do get all the way back down towards those high 30 levels, and that is probably what we can expect. That the natural gas market might be an extreme example, but it's probably an analog for what we can expect from the energy markets over the lengthy medium term. And basically, what that does is remove a significant headwind to growth. That high energy prices are a tax on growth, and the removal of that tax represents a particular benefit for the consumer. So that's also a tailwind for the equity markets, but nonetheless, we are in a corrective phase, and it's a corrective phase that could last for at least a few months and potentially longer than that as some of the overbought conditions that are still evident begin to be unwound. Then, when we look at some of the Asian markets outside of Japan, then the Nifty has continued to steady, and it is continuing to hold the region of the trend mean. And when we ask ourselves how many short volatility traders were actively leveraged in India, probably very few would be the answer, which is a good reason why the market has been less affected. The Indonesian market remains very firm, and its reaction to date has been really quite modest. When we look at the Thai market, its reaction has also been relatively modest, and it has found support pretty quickly. A number of these indices have not reacted back towards their respective trend means. They're comparatively unaffected by this bout of I think unwinding of leveraged trades deeply associated with the spike in VIX that we had last week. And the VIX index is back down to 25. I think it's extraordinarily unlikely that it goes all the way back down towards 10, but it could easily come back down towards 15. And then the question will be asked, what next? And then I think we will have probably, there is certainly the potential that we are in a more volatile environment than we have seen over the course of the last few years, because how could it be otherwise, considering that over the last 12 months we've had the most inert, least volatile period in history. So it's going to be practically impossible to get back to those levels simply because we're not in that kind of environment any longer. Then, when we look at the commodity complex, copper prices were up in a robust manner in here today. This is a clear upward dynamic to confirm support in the region of $3. The nickel price is also starting to rally again, and it is holding its progression of higher reaction lows, and most particularly it is holding that breakout and is firming from here. I think nickel is going to be a beneficiary from battery technology, not least because cobalt is a side or is a byproduct of nickel mining. Both nickel and cobalt are used in batteries. Cobalt is also a byproduct of copper mining in the Democratic Republic of Congo. If one were to get serious about not accepting conflict or or child labor or production out of Democratic Republic of Congo, then people will start looking at nickel production. And there is the possibility that LME will split the contract so that the nickel sulfide contract would gain credence and would be aimed squarely at supplying the battery sector. So I think that nickel does have potential here for a continued catch-up play relative to the other industrial metals. When we look at the London Metals Index, then it is continuing to hold the progression of high reaction lows. And then Glencore, which picked up I think a rent-seeking fine from the DRC last week, has bounced from the region of the trend mean, very much in line with what's happening in the copper price. Antofagasta is another pure play on copper, and it is right in the region of its trend mean at present. So I think that there is the potential that the resources sector as a pure cyclical play will continue to outperform and or at least perform in line with markets over the course of the next few months and indeed years. And then when we look at the gold price, it continues to firm above the trend mean, and so far this has been a relatively steady consolidation in the region of the upper side of this 18-month range. And as long as it is doing that, as long as it is holding the majority of the advance off the lows that we saw at the end of last year, then I think that this is still a reasonably benign environment, and that the hope of gold bulls for a sustained break up and out of these ranges will, I think, be resolved on the upside, or I guess rewarded at some point over the next few months. Platinum continues to firm from the region of the trend mean, although there has been a rather distinct lack of clear upward dynamics. So far, it is, I think, if we're being completely rational, it just looks like steadying. It needs to do more than that to really confirm that we're back in a demand-dominated environment. So, certainly last week was full of risk, and this week we're seeing some of the dust settle, and there is a rotation going on that when we look at, for example, some of the really high-flying shares, that Google, for example, has had the biggest pullback it's had since at least 2008. And that is going to take some time to work through. So, and we can see from Google's history that it is more than capable of going sideways for anything up to 18 months. And we could be at the beginning of one of those ranges right now. So, what that suggests is that we are going to get other sectors performing, and certainly the cyclical sectors, which are the resources, banking, and biotech sectors, are among the primary candidates to pick up that position of leadership. So then the risks that are outstanding are the fact that when we look at the high yield sector and spreads, that high yield spreads are now right at the upper side of their range. They're trading above the trend mean. When we look, and I'm going to post a chart of European high yield spreads in here today. Well, that fact that they are above the trend mean and firming, that is certainly not confirmation yet that spreads are widening out on a sustained basis, like we saw back from the middle of 2014. But it's a straw in the wind that we are seeing some tightness coming through in the credit markets, and most particularly because government bond yields are rising, and it is natural that if the risk on the sovereign is rising, then the risk in the credit is also rising. So this is something to be quite vigilant for, and to I think keep a close eye on. And I think with that, I will leave you for today, and I'll wish all the best to all of you.